Welcome back in. It is the Mark and Brian radio program. We're broadcasting live from the House of Blues on Sunset Boulevard. As we said, we've been going back over 25 years, and this next gentleman has a unique place in the history of our program in that when we first were told his name, we had never heard his name. Now he is a household name.
When we first heard his name, we thought he had one too many.
We did. And we can get into what's and whys and wheres. Please welcome a dear, dear friend of this program, Mr. Billy Bob Thornton.
Oscar-winning Billy Bob Thornton. Right. Billy Bob Thornton.
Now, all right, now, Billy Bob, before we get into the obvious, the films and the scripts and the directing and this and that, one of the things that I've always dug about creative is that it kind of runs full circle through not only telling stories, but basically with music, with rock and roll, you're telling stories. And your first love, way before writing and directing and acting, was music. You are currently involved in the Boxmasters. Tell us a little bit about the music, where it's taken you, what you're doing with it.
Generally, lately we're in the studio just recording, and we've recorded probably 10 albums in the last 2 years that we'll probably never put out.
That would be...
Wouldn't that be nice?
Counterproductive, I would think, if you're recording them.
It is counterproductive, actually. But no, we just keep recording because these days the music business has changed and, you know, people download music and everything. You don't put records out and the sequencing doesn't matter as much. And so we just keep recording because we love it. And the record label says, well, you know, we can't put out 10 albums a year. So so we'll put one out the first of next year and then probably play in here, you know, which we love doing. And,
right.
And go out and see people in the country again. And,
all right. And this is the part that I wanted to get to because I'm always intrigued by this in that with music, with really great traditionally classic rock and roll music, and then film and writing a script and directing and acting, it's really all about telling a story, is it not?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it depends on what type of, in music anyway, it depends on what type you are. I mean, there are people who write songs that just say, baby, baby, meet me at the malt shop, and that's not necessarily a story, but...
Well, it depends on what happens after the malt shop.
That's true. But then there are people that are very, you know, poetic, you know, the Bob Dylans of the world and people like that. So you got different types. But, yeah, I mean, generally, I grew up loving the storytelling songwriters, Merle Haggard and country music, for instance, people like that. Yeah, so... And there's still plenty of that out there. And then you have, you know, pop music, which is really designed more to have fun with. So.
Here's my number. Call me maybe.
Yeah.
Again, yeah. It depends on what happens after he calls her.
That's
right.
True.
Now, this man came to our attention with, I'm sure many of you, with a movie called Sling Blade. You know... You take the classes, you think you're a pretty good actor, you think you can, you know, yeah, I can hold my own, and then you see a movie like that, and what this gentleman did in that movie was remarkable.
And that's kind of where it began for us. We get a call, our producer at that time, Nicole, tells us, I got a call from a publicist who I respect. And the publicist said, look, I'm going to send over a couple of, and this is how long ago it was, but about, it was VHSs at this time.
Yeah,
I'm going to send over a...
For the younger people in the crowd, they had little wheels in them.
He said, I'm going to send over a couple of VHSs. I know you don't know the name of the movie. I know you don't know the name of the guy, but I'm promising you if you get Mark and Brian to take a look, they're going to want the guy. So he sent over these VHS. I throw the thing in my briefcase. I get home. It sat around for 2 days. Finally throw the thing in. Same with Brian. And we watched What Is Sling Blade. And then he became a dear friend.
This is a continuing story. Of course, he was nominated for an Oscar.
And listen, Billy Bob, sorry to go back to this, but it's always interesting to find out. I mean, here it is. You wrote this screenplay. You somehow found $1 million. You guys rode around in a van looking for what might be a nice location. Tell a little bit about, from your background, where that story came from.
Well, first of all, I'm a little disappointed that you said you, before Sling Blade, you guys didn't know my name.
Sorry.
Because, you know, I guess you missed Matlock. So, you know, I'm in divorce court, Matlock. There are a lot of things.
Well, I can tell you, Billy Bob, at my partner's age, Mark now, he's retiring. He's going to catch up on those.
Oh, yeah. the way it started was I had done this character in the theater for years. Oh. And I used to do a one-man show, and I did it at the West Coast Ensemble, a theater group I was involved in, and then at a theater just right up the street here. And I'd always wanted to make a movie of it, and my agent at the time said, listen, there's this guy, he has a little production company in New York. They were production assistants, but now they have their own company. And they've made one movie so far, and the movie was made for $60,000.
Wow.
And I said, boy, you guys are working hard for me, aren't you? So he said, I want to put you in a room with this guy because he's a big fan. I'd done a movie that I co-wrote with Tom Epperson called One False Move about 5 years before
that.
Phenomenal. And so this guy was a fan of that movie. And they put us in a boardroom at William Morris at this big table. It was just me and him. And he said, listen, we don't have any money, but...
That's a bad opening
line. That's a bad
brother.
Opening. And they said, but here's what we'll do. What we're doing is we're finding guys who have written something that they want to direct themselves, so we give you an opportunity to direct it, but we'll give you 50% of whatever the movie makes. Huh? That's our deal. And of course, I was thinking 50% of whatever the hell we're going to make. You know what I mean? Something like $11 or something. So anyway, he said, is there anything you'd like to do? I said, well, I have this character I do in the theater. And he said, cool. Well, what's it about? And I said, why don't I just show you? So I did the opening monologue from the movie there in the room with him.
Wow.
And he goes, dude, that is weird. He said... He said, we'll do it.
Wow.
And so we made
all
the movie.
In one meeting.
All in one meeting. And so we didn't show it to any other studios. And so we made the movie for $980,000. And what I didn't know, and they didn't tell me at the time, was that they didn't really have the money. We started the movie Sling Blade with $30,000, which they didn't tell me.
Wow.
And so every day they were scrambling and borrowing money and maxing out credit cards and everything, and that's the way they did it the whole way and never told me we didn't have the money. If I'd known that, I would have shot myself.
No wonder you could afford the potted meat.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Going ahead, the movie's a huge success, critically acclaimed. Everybody's seeing it. We told you about it. Hopefully you saw it when it was out. So we get up early pretty much every morning each year when they announce the Oscars. They do it at like 5:38 or whatever it is. So we were on the air. We're listening because he was our dear friend, and we heard his name being nominated. Ted, get Billy Bob Thornton on the phone. He was on a train. He was sleeping. We were the first people to get to tell him that he was nominated for an Oscar. Yeah.
That's the truth. And these guys... I had an assistant at the time, a guy named Joe McCracken, God rest his soul, passed away about 4 years ago.
I'm sorry.
And Joe was a buddy that I'd met when I was making Sling Blade in Arkansas. They said, you're going to need an assistant. And they just got a guy from Forest City, Arkansas, who had never done anything in his life. And so, and the first time Joe, you guys remember Joe, the first time he went to New York was with me. And we went on the train, and he said, man, I can't wait to get to New York because I'm going to have some Italian food. Well, we get there, and we're staying at this hotel, and I said, well, call me up when you're ready, and we'll go get some Italian food. It's like the best, it's better than in Italy, right? And so he never calls me, and finally I call him, and he had one of these cell phones like they had back in those days that literally looked like an Army field maneuver case. And like you have to open it up and put an antenna up, and and when it rings like a fire station, you know, and really embarrassing. So I call him up on this cell phone, and he goes, man, I'm already here. I forgot to call you. I said, where are you? He said, there's some, a lot of strip joints across the road and all this kind of stuff. And I said, you're in Times Square. Okay. And so... I said, what's the name of the restaurant? And he goes, Olive Garden. So Joe,
when you're
so that
your
tells
family.
You who my assistant was. He went to New York City for Italian food and went to the Olive Garden.
Nice.
So, but this was when the Olive Garden first came out.
Now, Billy Bob,
hard to get a chair.
I know that we've talked a little bit about this, but I wanted to get into it because this is where one of the places we come full circle. We had this wonderful gentleman on the show, already a star, big sitcom star, and he came in on a program and he wore his suit and tie. And I remember being moved by the fact that he would consider us worthy of a business suit.
Obviously, you've lost respect for us.
And the fact that this guy did the movie that you just described, which started out for $30,000, and he was phenomenal in it. And then when you did Bad Santa, you brought him back. Tell us, look, we know what he does as a performer, but tell us, because he, I think, was one of your dear friends. Tell us about your relationship and what kind of person the great John Ritter was.
Yeah. Well, John was known for his sort of tripping over the couch on Three's Company
sure.
and the boy next door kind of guy. The great thing about John was that he was really dark.
Really?
Yeah. He was. His sense of humor was one of the darker ones I ever knew. At one point, he used to do this character named Chuck Hurley, who was a guy who was on the verge of throwing up all the time. Chuck Hurley.
I would love to see this.
Oh, it was fantastic. So when he would be talking to you, he would, and people who had a weak stomach couldn't take it, but he would be talking, he'd say, listen, I was just wondering if you'd like to have lunch with me, you know, but anyway, a very funny guy, but I was in a relationship with someone and
yeah.
Oh no, it's not like that.
It's always like that.
And I broke off this relationship with this person. And then got into a relationship with another person, and that became very public. And I was supposed to go to John's that afternoon, and as it turns out, the press started following me everywhere. So, I mean, literally like chasing me around town.
Right, sure.
It was a bad day, but I was supposed to see John anyway, and so I drove over up Coldwater to go to John's house, and I get to his place, knock on the door, he answers the door, and the first thing he said to me was, nice trade. And I'm like, what? John was sick.
Now, and you bring that up, and we mentioned it a second ago, but we've every time we have you on, either in the room or on the phone, we bring it up, and every time it's, boy, we'd like to, and, you know, we're thinking about it, we're talking about it. Read a story not 2 weeks ago on our program, it's actually beginning Bad Santa 2.
That's happening. It is happening now.
Well, here's what I can tell you. I can tell you that these days in the movie business, it's very difficult to get a movie made.
All right.
And especially a good one. And if it's based on a comic book, it's easy.
Right.
If it's about some nerdy guys who get in trouble with a sheep in Mexico, it's easy. But if you're doing anything else, it's kind of hard. This one has a built-in audience, so it's a little easier to do.
Yeah.
But they tell me that we are doing a sequel to Bad Santa this year. And they tell me it's going to take place in New York and that the script should be ready in about 2 weeks. And I'm not supposed to say what it's about, but I got to tell you, I read the first 40-something pages, and it's pretty hysterical. So,
well, Billy Bob, you know, above and beyond the great work that you do, and those of us that enjoy film and creative work and music, thank you for that. But from both of us, your friendship, always there for us, no matter what you've done, Christmas shows and in studios. You are dear friend, and you always will be. Thank you for all the time.
Thank you very much. And I have to say, you know, congratulations to you guys over the years, because you're really the best, and you always have been. And it's been an honor and a pleasure being on the show. And you, I just want to let you know that I've kind of in semi-retirement myself. So, you know, as of a couple of years ago, I'm taking it a little easier.
Sure.
I can tell you some things to look forward to.
Please.
Now that your kids are in their 60s, they're a lot easier to handle. They're much easier to handle once they get up in their 60s.
Good to know.
There are some things that you may not think are going to be that great now.
Yeah, right.
But I got to tell you, there's something to be said for corduroy house shoes. Tapioca. You know, there's some great stuff about it.
I'm looking forward, and thank you for the great things I can look forward to.
Absolutely. Billy Bob Thornton, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks a lot.